for joining us for the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises.
MassMEP understands that there are so many elements to a manufacturer's business, whether it's finding their inefficiencies, strengthening their internal processes, or unlocking their growth that can extend a manufacturer beyond its current limitations.
Every episode, take a journey with us as we talk with manufacturers, legislature, subject matter experts, and so many more as we head down the path of manufacturing across the state of Massachusetts.
Whether we're in the Northeast,
Southeast,
Central, or Western regions of the Commonwealth,
every episode will explain more about manufacturing and what's happening in your own backyard. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast. I'm Haley Steele.
And I'm Kevin Tata.
Exciting episode today. We haven't had a topic in quite a while, so I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I'm thrilled with Manufacturing in the Future, just about a month away. This is thrilling.
Yeah. So Kevin is even more thrilled, and I'll explain why, because he is super intrigued by our guest that we have with us today. And I would like to introduce everybody to Casey Brown. Casey Brown, this is what I wrote down for you, Casey, because I took this from your profile. It says speaker, author, pricing geek, command the prices you deserve. So, I mean, without further ado, introduce that. Like, tell us about you.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for the opportunity to be on the podcast. People often, when they're reading my intro, want to make sure that the audience knows that I wrote the words pricing geek. And I don't take that as an insult. I'm very proud of it. I love this topic. I am deeply, wildly passionate about helping companies command the prices they deserve for the excellence they provide, which is why I'm so excited to be coming to Massachusetts next month and addressing the crowd and giving them some really practical, tangible takeaway ways that they can improve profitability in their business, especially in the current economic climate, which is a little bit tumultuous. So really just arming people with skills and mindset to be even more effective at asking for more money and winning more deals. So yeah, I'm a total geek about it. No apologies.
I love it. Well, that's awesome. We're total geeks about our podcast. And you'll understand why, because Kevin, we have a recap episode we do once a month. In the recap episode, we have jokes. We think they're very funny, but a lot of people would probably classify them as bad dad jokes. But for our topic podcast, Kevin, he does these amazing icebreakers. So before we jump into you really opening us up to this world of pricing, we're going to have Kevin kind of get us started and get things flowing here on the thought process side of things.
Cool. Absolutely. Today's amazing icebreaker is... If you can instantly master one new skill, no practice required, what would it be and why? And I'll go first just because I thought about this icebreaker probably a few hours ago. So I've had plenty of time to think about it. I'll give you guys another minute to think about it. But I couldn't really decide between two of them just because they're two things that I've been trying to master recently, but have had a tough time. I've wanted to bake sourdough bread. And I've had a horrible time doing that. I have to give it a third, fourth try, like recently. But every single time I do it and it fails, it just hits me hard. And then I got to take like a couple months off and then try again. And then the other one I have is to learn how to snowboard. And that just like the sourdough, is painfully hard and hit me hard. And I have to continually practice that. So those are the two skills I would instantly master, no practice required.
Awesome.
What are you guys thinking?
Casey, do you have one for this?
Well, yeah, I had one. And then when Kevin went, I want two also, since why not? And it's specifically snowboarding, interestingly, is the one I just added. So I took up snowboarding after age 45, which is a terrible time to take up snowboarding. Snowboarding is either a young person's sport or an old person's sport who's been doing it since they were a young person, because there's so much falling. There is so much falling. And I haven't given up yet, and because I am stubborn, and I would kind of just have this mental picture of this crazy old redheaded lady like flying down the mountain, passing kids, like, you know, just being this eccentric crazy woman, which fits my vibe. But I don't know if I can take it because there's so much falling. And, you know, when you are in
There
your
is.
late 40s, falls do not, you don't bounce right back up from them in the same way you did when you were 20. So yeah, I would love to be a rad snowboarder. That would be
Yeah.
great. So I'm stealing that one. The one that first popped in my head when you asked the question is, I would love to be a masterful guitar player. I
Oh.
grew up playing music. I played sax, alto, tenor, baritone, sax. Love music. Love to read and play music. Always wanted to be able to play the guitar. Want to be able to roll up to a campfire and pull it out and just jam. You know, that sounds so cool. I have played a little bit. I'm not very good because I don't have time or make time to practice. And so if I can just get good overnight at something, yeah, I'd love to be really great at playing the guitar.
That's a good one because I mean, instruments are things that I feel like take the most practice, you know?
Years to be great
Yeah.
at. Yeah.
Incredible.
Oh, geez.
Where
This
are you,
is a lot
Haley?
of pressure. Well, instantly, my first gut was knife skills, like as a chef.
Oh, I thought you meant some kind of like martial art, I don't know what I thought. Yeah, I
Five
envisioned
star,
you like a
Chinese
ninja.
star.
Like a ninja.
I like the knife skills though. That
Hold on, now I'm thinking like a whole different world. Now I was like, I might maybe like spying, like to be a spy, like spy skills. Like, oh my gosh, I'm on it. Like, yeah, no, knife skills was my first thing I went to. And then you guys start talking about really good things. Like, when you start talking about playing a guitar, I was like, oh, that's like really like sophisticated and like fancy. And I'm like, not there. So I'm going, yeah, knife skills. But now that you say that, Casey, I think I wouldn't mind being a spy. Like if I could find those skills that you do, like to you could I could be a different person, like instantly overnight, I could just flip a switch and I become this person that is a totally different character, day in and day out. I think that would probably suit me and my personality very well. So I would totally
Awesome.
do that. Yeah.
Like a master of disguise.
Yeah, I get people to do things that they were like no idea that they could do and just amazing. And that's what I think that's kind of like what you do, Casey, like where you will be able to get people, only because I know a little bit about what you're going to do and what you're going to speak to at the event. You might be able to do that yourself. You might be able to turn people to start doing things in a way that they're going to be like, oh my gosh, like it's a whole new person and a whole new side of me that I didn't know that I could do through pricing. So I think that's what we'll do. I do have a question for you because curiosity killed the cat. I get that. But for me, when I'm in a room with women such as yourself that have just such a profound effect on other people, I have to always ask how, what, or why? Like, how did you get started on this? Like, what led you to boost pricing?
When I was a small child, growing up to be a professional pricing speaker and consultant was not on the vision board, right? Like, I did not know this profession existed. I knew about like six things, like doctor, lawyer, artist, firefighter, like, you know, who comes to career day when you're a kid, right? So I had no idea. And so the very truthful answer is, I found my way into this space by accident, but it's the best accident ever because I've been doing it for 25 years and I have never found anything else professionally that I have even a fraction of the passion that I have for this topic. But the kind of way I found it is, so I'm an engineer by training, chemical engineer. But I double majored in Spanish, lived and studied in Spain, and went back and got an MBA. So if it sounds like I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up, it's because I did not know what I wanted to be when I grew up. But I was good at math and science, and classic advice there is go be an engineer. And I loved engineering. I love the technical and analytical aspects of it. But I am an extrovert and I love people and I saw all these people on the commercial side of the business going to, you know, national sales meetings in Las Vegas, and that seems so glamorous to me because I was just sitting in the lab or the factory doing engineering stuff, and I thought, I want to know about sales. I want to know about marketing. And I was a GE. I was at GE at the time under Jack Welch, back in GE's heyday when it was a whole different kind of company than it is now. And oh, the best way to get close to the commercial side of the business was to become one of their early Six Sigma black belts. So I went into the Six Sigma program, became a black belt, which was a rotational program at GE, and did a rotation in sales, did a rotation in marketing, and then I did a rotation in pricing. And I was like, that's it. This is my jam. It's the intersection of art and science, people and process, data and psychology. I just have so much fascination for how complex and fraught with fear and misery and chaos this whole process of pricing is, considering that if you read an econ textbook, it looks like this simple, like, yeah, just trade money for value and that's it. In the real world, it's so different. And I've just been fascinated ever since. It's been a 25-year love affair, and I've had the business for about 15 years. So 10 years or so into the pricing journey, I said, hey, I want to bring what I'm learning in these giant, Fortune 10 and Fortune 100 companies to the small and medium sized business owner who deserves to get paid for their excellence as well, but maybe lack some of these tools or insights. And so that's how I got here.
Wow, impressive. Impressive.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Just like many other people nowadays, I mean, just like myself coming out of college, like I have no idea what I want to do. So yeah, you find your niche. So a lot of the listeners for this podcast are mainly manufacturers. How do manufacturers specifically benefit from pricing strategies compared to other industries?
So they're exactly the same and completely different. So the exactly the same is the reality is that good pricing strategies and practices are pretty industry agnostic. And the reason is, and this that might surprise people, but once they hear the reason, they say, actually, that makes sense. And the reason is that strategies that customers use to get our stuff for less, the tactics and like basically buying strategies to beat people up on price are pretty industry agnostic as well. In other words, what I say to, somebody who's thinking to themselves, I don't know if I should come to this event in June. I don't know if this is really for me. If I, maybe for that other kind of business, not for my kind of business. What I would say is, have you ever heard your price is too high? This is too expensive. You have to match a competitive quote. I need you to sharpen your pencil. Is this your best number? This is outside my budget, and so on. So everybody who's ever sold anything has heard those kind of things, whether you sell a professional service or you're a manufacturer or distributor or your software company or your construction company. If you sell anything ever to anybody who gives you a hard time about price, the most effective countermeasures and effective strategies and tactics of good pricing, decision making, and execution apply. And that's how manufacturers are exactly the same. That said, I don't want to wipe away or overlook the differences. Every industry is unique. Every marketplace and geography is unique. Even within a marketplace, inside an industry, company A might be different than company B. And so I think it is important to first respect that and then leverage it, because every company has their unique value proposition. And the most effective ways to use that value proposition is a defense against price pressure. So, and manufacturing is no different. There are some unique things there. But I would say, and what I'll be talking about from the stage next month is really like very specific strategies and tactics that are helpful, having been proved with hundreds or maybe even thousands at this point of manufacturing companies that have employed them.
Yeah. Are there common mistakes that people make? Well, obviously manufacturers, when it comes to pricing their products or services.
Yes, of course. This is the tricky part, like how many days do we have to record this podcast? And I don't mean to take a shot at anybody listening. This is not easy stuff. And the reason is, if you like, I always like to know, like, what's happening and then what's the reason. What's happening is, here's some common mistakes and I'll talk about them. But I think that, it's important to look at the reason, because it's sometimes if you don't kind of address the root cause, you're just putting a band-aid on a problem and then you still have the problem. And I think it's important to understand why pricing works the way it does in most businesses. And I think it's one word, and that word is fear. I think underneath most pricing and selling decisions are fear. If you line up 100 people who sell and serve customers and say, what do you love about selling and serving customers? I bet you my house, zero of them will say, I love when I get to tell them the price tag. It's so fun to talk about price. Like, that is not what anybody says ever. I love this stuff and I don't even love telling that part. That's not the fun part. The fun part is building relationships, solving problems, being the hero, helping your customers out, like making things better in the world of your customers, not like telling them a big number. And so if you acknowledge the truth of that this isn't the fun part, and it is for very many people who sell a stressful and fearful part, then that creeps into our decision making. That creeps into our proposal generation. That creeps into our negotiation strategies. That creeps into how we handle objections from customers. So, for example, in manufacturing, and specifically, you mentioned a lot of the folks that'll be present next month are sort of job shops. And, the nature of job shops often is that they're kind of custom. In other words, you're not making the same widget 87 bajillion thousand times, and you have a bunch of different prices. Every job's different, every customer's different. And what that backs job shop owners into is cost plus pricing, which I don't love cost plus pricing because it's not value based, but you almost don't have another option if you're in that kind of business. Okay, that's fine. As long as we're putting the right margin on, as long as we're adding enough plus there, and too much fear based decision making around that, not granular enough decision making around that, and decision making that is overly one size fits all. I hear from manufacturer like, oh, we have a 30% margin target. Gross, I would like to, or 50%, whatever the number is. I'd like to hit a 50% gross margin this year. And there are some customers and some products and services that should be 20 points lower than that, and some other customers and products that could be 20 points higher. And so I would say too fear based, too, which results in too low, and we're not granular enough in how we do it.
Kevin, can you beat that?
That's incredible. I love it. So we've seen that you talk a lot about confidence and pricing. What are the components of pricing confidence and how do you build it?
Well, if we understand, kind of just reflecting on the last answer I gave, that the sort of the default place is maybe fear, and fear can erode skill. In other words, our beliefs, our attitudes, our habits, our emotions, our self-limiting beliefs can sabotage skill every day. So sometimes, even if when you're in a selling role, I know what to do, I know what to say, I know what process to follow. I have some talking points for objection handling. Like we've really like invested in the skill side. Even in the face, when we're actually like in the heat of battle with a customer negotiating pricing, if we, even though we've been taught what to do, what to say, what process to follow, we sometimes can't do that or won't do that. We get in our head, we get in our gut, we feel pushy, we feel salesy, we feel weird, we get afraid of losing the deal. We start thinking about the excess capacity that we've got right now and we really need orders, or my boss is on my butt because I missed my numbers last month or whatever. And all of this stuff causes us to operate from fear and underprice. And so if that's the default starting point, then you say, okay, how do we fix that? How do we address that? And I think there's a simple formula I like to talk about, which is messaging plus preparation equals confidence. Messaging plus preparation. So I'll speak very quickly to both of those components. Messaging is, do your people know what to say when they're standing across from a customer and that customer says, I'm sorry that your guys are getting killed with tariffs right now. That's your problem. I can't eat these tariffs. If you try to pass these tariffs along to me, I'm going to go buy from XYZ. Do they know what to say? Or are you asking your seven people on your team to independently derive good value messaging in the face of objections? Because your seven people are not equally gifted in the arts of value message creation. Some of them are probably pretty good at it. They can kind of on the fly figure out how to handle that and negotiate that. Other folks are deer in a headlight and they just discount. They just give it away. They give it back, right? So messaging is how do we, how many, and I would ask business owners, how many dollars and hours have you spent on price objection messaging? And the answer for most businesses is zero. I've spent $0 hour on it, 0 hours on it. I've got some value messaging stuff that we've put in people's hands, and we hope they can figure out how to flip that on its head and use it as a defense when we're pressed on price. But that's very different, especially when you consider they're not. You can't just talk about value when a question is about something specific like tariffs. You can't just talk about value when you're being compared against someone else who sells. You got to talk about value, but it's got to be packaged in the right way based on the objections you're getting. So I think, I advise companies to think about something like a price objection FAQ doc. and you should generate a new one every time you do a price increase, or every time something changes in the economic climate, or every time a new entrant comes into the market or a competitor starts doing something really different, because those answers change. So that's the messaging piece, is just be very thoughtful, intentional about the best way, because customers are going to ask. They're going to beat you up on price from now until the end of commerce. If you do not like that, get out of business. Because in a capitalist economy, customers are going to come knocking for better prices forever. And if you do not prepare your people with the right messaging to handle that, they will give away the farm. I cannot tell you the number of times I've been sitting across from a salesperson and we're looking at a deal and it's like, oh, you quoted them, $100 a pound, whatever. And then you sold it for $94 a pound. Like, why'd you do that 6%? Well, they were kind of asked, blah, blah. I felt like I had to give them something. I felt like I had to give them something is code for I didn't have a better answer ready. Have a better answer ready. So invest in the messaging. That's number one. Number two is preparation. You can have the world's best price objection FAQ doc. It will do your company zero good if it just sits there in everybody's email inbox. You got to open the document, say it out loud, say it to the dog, the kids, each other, your spouse. You got to grab your team and, practice this, because you got to consider, again, we're talking about fear. When fear is in charge, the amygdala is in charge. That's the primitive part of the brain. That's the caveman brain. It's good at fight or flight. It's good at freeze. It's terrible at reasonable, nuanced, profitable decision making. And so we can't go into a setting where we're talking to a customer and they're beating us up on price and our amygdala gets activated and then think we're going to remember that thing that's written on a piece of paper. We have to create automaticity around it through like a muscle memory thing. Like, we got to say it until we feel comfortable. So we've got to invest in the messaging and the preparation, and that leads to the confidence.
It's like presenting in front of the class. Over
Exactly so.
preparation is key.
Exactly so.
That I
And one more thing about that. Another reason preparation is so important is because, like, let's imagine we're like, okay, we're company XYZ. We have tariffs going, like, creating this kind of impact. If a customer asks this question, here's the talking points we want our team to leverage about our value and how we compare against competition and everything else. Great. Well, the way Susan says it on your team is different than the way Joe says it. They have different personalities, they have different styles, and everybody's got to find an authentic voice. This isn't about scripty robot. It's about like an authentic, like, sort of bringing that message into our system, and that requires some repetition.
Yeah.
Wow. This is what I love that you do is the way that you break it down into such digestible understanding. Like, for me to sit here and hear you say things the way that you do, like, a simple term is fear. Nobody uses that. Like, that's not a term that a lot of people like to use because they think, oh, it's too simplified, or it can cause, fear it might become something bigger than it really needs to be. But the way that you make it so just basic is like, I mean, I could probably listen to you for to talk about this stuff for hours, because I think a lot about, like, as you're saying these things, I'm thinking about the stuff that we do at Mass MEP and a lot of the ways that we try to talk through this, right? Kevin, we talk about this all the time, like the way we have our key messaging framework and that we try to get our people on the same page. And it's just like, it is like, I mean, the light bulbs are just all over the place. If you can't see them physically above my head right now, like, holy cow, like, it's just like ding, ding, ding. That's all I'm hearing the whole time you're talking about this. So
Thanks.
it's so exciting. I don't think that I said, or I don't think either one of us said, I mean, Kevin did say about manufacturing your future, but you're a keynote speaker at the event. And like, if people are listening to this right now, and you said this to me earlier, Casey, like, if you bring really good knowledge to somebody, they're not going to be like, oh, that's enough, and they're satisfied with it. They're going to want more. And so if people haven't just heard from the previous, 15, 20 minutes we've been talking and don't want to hear more about this, they're crazy. Like, you're crazy if you don't want to come and just hear her speak to see what she has to say at this event. And I think that's one of the things, like, what can they kind of expect to hear from you, as the
Yeah,
keynote speaker?
sure. Do you mind if I take that question in like 15 seconds and address before that, like just a couple responses to a few things you said? Is that all right?
Absolutely,
Because
yeah.
I think you touched on something important that is worth mentioning, which is that, like, it's easy to sort of Especially in B2B industrial and manufacturing sector, we like to tell ourselves that this is a very logical, data-driven business, not an emotional one. And I will tell you, I'm an engineer myself, and I have worked with many, 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 many technical companies. And we like to think we sell logically and based in the data, and that our customers buy from us logically and based in the data. And that is absolutely true. We do. And also, emotion plays a huge role, both on the seller side and on the buyer side. And there is boatloads of research to support it. So if you're listening to this and you are saying, well, that might be true for, I don't know, some marketing firms or something, people that just live in emotion space, but we're a hard-hitting manufacturer. No. It is affecting your decision making. Fear affects your decision making, and emotions affect the buyer as well. And so, one of the ways, and this is back to the question, one of the questions Kevin mentioned earlier, sort of like, what's one of the pitfalls you see in manufacturing? And it's that, I mentioned a margin target. Okay, we have a margin target of 30. Where'd 30 come from? Is 30 the right number, or could it be 35? It's often us that creates our own ceilings, and it's rooted in fear because we have payroll to make, and we got p a team of people to keep busy, or we got a manufacturing floor we want to have full, and we end up pricing out of fear. And so even when we've got sort of systems and processes, like if somebody's saying, oh, she's talking about teams, making decisions from fear, we don't even have our teams making those decisions. We have an Excel spreadsheet, and we pop all this stuff in, and out the bottom comes the number, which is often very common in that sort of manufacturing and job shop space. Say, so like, yeah, but those formulas got populated by someone. Are those the right numbers? Are we shooting as high as we should be and can be in every scenario? Or have we gotten too watered down, too one size fits all, or too low? And so fear creeps in, even if you're a very logical, data-driven business. It creeps in on the selling side and the buying side. And even if your team isn't making these decisions, it's embedded in your decision making. The last thing I'll say, and then I'm going to get to your answer, about the simple. I, as much as I'm a pricing geek, I'm a geek about pedagogy and how adults learn. And I would say all of us are too busy. Everybody that's going to come to that event on June 5th is too busy. Then they're going to go back to their teams, and they're going to try to teach their teams some stuff. And their teams are too. It's we have too much stuff coming at us. And if you try to share information, even valid, useful, helpful, relevant information, with people in a way that is not broken down to be really bite-sized and really actionable, you have wasted their time. And I don't want to waste anybody's time. And I'm going to get up on that stage, and I'm going to speak for 90 minutes such that people will walk out of there and make different business decisions the following day that will dramatically increase profitability in 2025. And if you don't do it simply, well, who does it say? Was it Albert Einstein said, if you don't know how to explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough? I might have gotten the quote wrong and maybe misattributed it, but that's absolutely true. Make it simple. Keep it simple. Okay, now what am I going to talk about? Well, that really, like, to your question. So how the really the what's going to happen on that stage is a few things. One is I want to pull back the curtain and expose tactics that customers use, some of the common negotiation tactics customers use, and then arm the folks in the audience with the methods, messaging tools, and confidence to walk into your customer's space, whether that's literally walk into the space, or it's a RFP, or done over email, however negotiations happen in your space, that you're able to walk out with the most deals possible at the highest prices possible. And a little bit of content, not 90 minutes worth, but a little bit of content on the role of tariffs right now, because that's so topical. We'll be talking about that and some specific strategies that I advise companies to use and look at. And if you are, by the way, listening to this and you think, well, I'm not affected by tariffs, that is not the bulk of what I'm talking about. And it will guaranteed, 100% guaranteed, you will make more money as a result of your attendance there. And if you don't, call me up and I will refund your everything. Like you th there is money to be made. There is money to be made.
This is what happens when people start talking about things. I'm the 7-year-old that asks why constantly. So I'm going to ask you this question. Do you believe, or from your experience and your position, that no matter what, everybody and anybody is affected by tariffs?
Oh yes. Yeah. I did a keynote yesterday in San Antonio, and it was a mixed audience of all industries. And I talked for a couple of minutes about tariffs, and I said, if you are in manufacturing distribution and you are bringing in any product overseas, then this is how this is going to affect you. By the way, everybody else, if you haven't been affected yet, you will be. And a bunch of people in the audience were nodding because I've been speaking to business owners who are in, run marketing firms or law firms or software companies. If you and we're seeing this already in our own business. So, I speak, but I also run a training company where we teach this kind of stuff to teams, and we're seeing it in our pipeline. People are saying, "I want to work with you. We know we want to do this program, but we're just really nervous right now. We just want to pause spending. We need to just hang on a couple. We'll get back to you in a quarter." So if you it is having a chilling effect across the B2B space. If it hasn't already, it will start to show up in B2C as well, no matter what you sell and who you sell it to, because somewhere in your chain, some dollars that end up in your bank account came from somebody affected by this. So if you are not a manufacturer or distributor affected directly, do you have any customers that are manufacturers and distributors? Or do you have any customers who are many? Because if you do somewhere, this is going to come home and hit you. If it hasn't, it will soon. And so I think it's really important to be like eyes wide open about that and not kid ourselves that because we don't have to write a tariff check directly to the government that we're not affected. Not to be doom and gloom. I think there's stuff to be done about it. And even in the most difficult economic climate, there are winners and losers, right? You look at the Great Recession, the Great Depression, COVID, previous rounds of tariffs. No matter how chaotic the economic situation has ever been, there are some companies out there able to charge a price premium compared to their inferior competitors. Price compression has never gone to zero ever in history, and it's not going to this time either. I bet my house on it.
Wow.
Love it. I love
So
it.
be the best, be excellent, focus on your excellence, and then go eke out the price premium you deserve. And you want to learn more about how to do that? I'll see you on June 5th.
I love that. I love that. That's a great tagline right there. If there's one mindset shift you hope to spark in manufacturers at the event, what would it be?
I think some confidence and resolve that pricing power is there and exists. I think it's we talked a bit before about fear, and if anybody feels like I'm, being kind of casting blame or shame, I am not. It is understandable that we fear it because we're afraid if we raise our prices too high or we hold the line on discounts, we'll lose sales volume. And we got people counting on us. We can't afford to lose a bunch of sales volume, and that creates the fear. But the other thing that contributes to the fear is we get very asymmetrical feedback from customers. Here's what I mean. You come in with a price tag. Sometimes your customer thought it was going to be more than that. They don't tell you that. They don't say, "Is that all? What a bargain. I thought you were going to be 20% higher. Unbelievable. Thank you so much." No, they stay quiet about that. Or they might even say, "Is that your best number?" Because why not? Can't hurt to ask, right? So we don't get feedback when our prices are too low, but we get plenty of feedback when our prices are too high. And we get feedback that our price is too high, even sometimes when they are too low. So if you look at the asymmetry of the feedback that we get from customers, it's reasonable that it starts to tug down our confidence and just pull at it and erode it over time. And that leaves people operating from a bit of a scarcity mindset around pricing and sales volume, and they're afraid. And then you add to that kind of normal fear, any economic situation that amps up that fear turns to panic, like a tariff situation, right? So people are operating with a lot of unease and fear right now, even more than normal. And so if I can have any impact on that stage, obviously, I want to be able to share some very specific, tangible, tactical things people can do. But that, in absence of confidence, will do no good because people will learn tactics they won't employ. The only way they will employ them is if they have the confidence to do that, that isn't going to be bad for their business, that they can grow and thrive, not just survive by employing them. So, really, for me, the mindset shift is about resolve and confidence.
I think the other thing that really is ringing through right now for me is the when you spoke about the buy-in earlier, about how important it is for everybody to be bought in all the way through. We do hear a lot of that from our side of things. Sometimes we do hear a lot of the disconnect between the leadership and, the shop floor level, or depending on where it is, or maybe one department to another. And I think what's pretty impressive is just the way that you broke it down from what we look at from our perspective. Obviously, we're on the marketing side of things, and like hearing you say things about, it almost feels like you're saying what we always say is everybody's a marketer. We always have to all say and have the same kind of conversation. I love that. I might have to have some of your statements put into a script that I might have to use more frequently and more often in some of our marketing team meetings. It might be good for us to use, but for me, I want to do a little bit of some. Do you have some pricing MythBusters? This is one of our kind of bonus questions we threw together. We wanted to know if there's any you could debunk some common pricing myths that manufacturers might believe.
Yeah, so we've touched on them, a few of them already a little bit. So one is like the idea that there is like when the idea of like a margin target, right? So like, there is a myth that we believe that X percent margin is a good margin. X percent margin is a competitive margin. And when I say it's a myth, it's not complete, it's not like it's a complete falsehood, right? It gets rooted in something. It's rooted in plenty of selling experience where we've lost deals here and we've won deals here and this is enough to pay all our bills and keep enough profit left over. And so it's not that it's illogically generated. It's that it is it's an the myth isn't the number. The myth is we believe the number is the truth and the end. And the reality is, I think that a seed I would like to plant is that it is worth interrogating the model, the structure that we have around our pricing decision making more often. Be willing to be wrong about what we're certain that the market will bear and won't bear, at least in some areas of the business, some products, some services, some customers, some opportunities. Get a little more granular about that. Be willing to, like, I think, have more skepticism about your certainty of how your structure is the numbers in your structure, right? So that's one thing, is that what you believe is the truth may not be about pricing. Another one is that the customer has all the power, right? And this is an easy one to believe because the customer is the one writing the check. And if they don't write the check, we have no money. And if we have no money, we can't exist as a business. So it feels sometimes like they're sitting across from us, cutting the POs, writing the checks, making it rain, and that gives them the power. And I believe very much that if you provide an excellent product or service, that you deserve to sit at that table as a peer, not a peddler. They do not have all the power. Do you believe in what you sell? Do you solve real problems for your customers? Do you manufacture excellent products? Because if you do, I mean, they're going to buy these products from someone. Why not from you? So I think this is maybe a bit of an inferiority complex sometimes we come to the selling table with, that like they have a lot of the power and I have to cave or I'm going to lose the deal. And I have oodles, hundreds, thousands of examples of people that are put under pressure by the customer, hold the line and still win the deal. And so does everybody listening to this, by the way. Like, what I'm saying here is not something they've never experienced. They've experienced it. But the question is, are we standing up fully for our value every time we can, or are sometimes we're operating from fear? And maybe it's not realistic to say we're never going to let fear creep in and affect our decision making. We're human beings still. Till AI takes over all selling and buying, which is not soon, we're going to keep having human emotions affect this process. But we want to banish fear as much as possible and make sure we're making data-driven decisions rooted in our value and the specific, unique ways we solve problems for customers, much more so than wringing our hands and perseverating over fear of lost sales volume. That's just a phantom fear. So, I guess that's the second myth I'll mention. It's just this idea that they're holding all the cards. They're not.
Yeah. Wow. Kevin, do you have any more questions? Because I have another one for.
Better with it.
So this is probably a common question. Well, this is a question we probably would get a lot is we're doing an event. It's called Manufacturing Your Future through Technology, Sustainability, and Workforce. And then the next question would be, how in the world do we see this connected to you? Like, why would we think of, and I know why we we'll found you and how we are connected to you. We obviously met you through the NIST MEP network, and that's how we got connected. But did you at any point kind of go, ooh, let me see how this works, or was it pretty easy for you to understand when we asked you?
Well, I will tell you exactly why. So no, it wasn't hard for me to connect. And in the word specifically from your event title that I really grabbed onto is sustainability. And let me connect the dots between pricing and sustainability. It is not what is going on at the revenue line or the top line of our business that lets us know as business owners and leaders that we can afford to invest in growth. Right. So whatever's going on at your, with sales volume and revenue, that isn't the profit pool that we use to make decisions around pricing or around investing. It's the profit pool. It's what's left over at the end, right? And so if you need a new piece of equipment, or you need to hire two new people for manufacturing line ABC, or you need to invest in some inventory, or you need to hire a new salesperson, or you need to upgrade your ERP, or anything else you need as a business to grow and thrive into tomorrow, that is paid for out of the profit pool. And there is no greater financial lever for any business in the world than pricing. X percent increase in price has a bigger impact on profitability than X percent increase in sales volume or X percent reduction in expenses. I'm of course a big fan of grow, sell more, do that for sure. Be smart about your cost, cut out waste and errors and procure better. Absolutely yes. But neither of those two things is going to have as big of an impact as pricing. And so if you want a sustainable business, if you want to exist a year from now, a decade from now, a century from now, pricing is the best way to preserve sustainability. Revenue is for vanity, profit is for sanity.
Wow. Ooh, that is
Great.
great. I'm a learner at heart. It's my love language. I really do enjoy learning and growing and finding out something new. So this just for me has just been a like this is a treat. Like I thoroughly have enjoyed listening to you talk to you this stuff. This is pretty impressive. And I'm not a manufacturer and I'm not in the manufacturing world, but I can hear things from you that I know we can apply to what we do every day. And so yeah, I don't believe there will not be a single person in that room that will not be able to get some value from what you're saying when they walk away from this at the end, because it's truly impressive. Like I am thrilled. I'm thrilled that you joined us. I'm thrilled that people are going to be able to hear more from you. And I'm really excited about how this event's going to kick off that day. We made some adjustments over the years. You know, we did like what you said. The first year, we kind of did it and we did panels and discussions, and a lot of people were like, it was really kind of like just like talking at, talking at, talking at. And then over the years, we said, let's do breakout sessions. Let's take the elephant and eat it a bite at a time, right? And break it into those bite-sized pieces so it is digestible and people can do this. And then it's like thinking outside of the box and like, you know, bringing you into this and being like, wait a second, this can connect. And we know and we see the connection points, and then just trying to get everybody else to see those connectors. So thank you for doing that, because that thoroughly, it really, you just boom, hit the nail on the head with it. So
Oh,
that was
thanks.
yeah.
I'm really excited to be there. I have a deep passion for this work, and it's rooted for me in the mission that my fervent belief is if you're excellent at what you do and you deliver excellent products and services to your customers, and you ought to be paid like you're excellent. And anything less is unjust because your resources are sitting in someone else's bank account. And what would be possible for your firm if you were not accepting mediocre pay for excellent work? What would you invest in? How would you grow? How would you serve your customers better? How would you take better care of your employees? How would you be able to take more money home to your family? I mean, this has a really important human impact. It's about dollars and cents for sure, but behind all of that is a bunch of people's lives affected. And so for me, it's a mission. I bring pretty considerable passion and energy for it. So I'm very much looking forward to being at the event, and I hope folks that are listening in are on the fence about joining us. Just get on the website and register. Let's do this. Let's make some money.
Yeah. I will give you we always like to do a shameless plug. So like if people want to learn more about you and what you do, where would you have them go, Casey?
Great. So, a few different places. I write a blog pretty regularly and put out a lot of good free content at boostpricing.com. You can sign up for our blog. But I do even more on LinkedIn. So you can find me at Casey Brown Boost. I put a lot of, especially video content around LinkedIn. And so, I'm a, because this is a passion and a mission for me, we certainly work with companies to help them get better at this. But I also put out a lot of free content because my belief is that this is A, this stuff works, B, businesses need it. And so I want to get it in everybody's hands. So if you want to kind of pre-check out, who's this person going to be on the stage, what's she all about? You can find lots of stuff about my beliefs and what we teach and how we do it in those two places.
Awesome. Well, thanks. All right. I feel super energized for the rest of until we get this going. But thank you so much. We appreciate it. And I guess we want to thank everybody for listening to the Manufacturing Podcast. And we'll see everybody at Manufacturing Your Future. So they need to go to our website at massmap.org and get registered. And until then, we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Mass MEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises.
You can subscribe to our channel anywhere you listen to your podcast, or you can always go to our website at massmep.org.
We'll see you next time, whether it's in
our space,
your space,
or cyberspace.